Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday here on the Jeff Gawkins Show. Oh, we got a lot going on in studio today. First of all, Rocco's back. Rocco is back in studio eyeing Jeffrey's breakfast sandwich. Now, we had a little, I don't even want to go into it, Jeffrey. You were adopting Rocco, then you weren't adopting Rocco, and now you are. Is Rocco back?
Rocco's
What's
back.
What's the Rocco update? Rocco's back. He's good?
Rocco's back.
Rocco's here. Rocco's back. And... how's Rocco adjusting to the new home?
Rocco's a very good boy. His problem is he just he has to chase the cat.
I have to say
he's very now, sweet though. He's a sweet dog, and also he loves Josephine.
So you of course had a dog and cat previously.
Correct.
It was an old dog.
Yes.
It was an old dog, and so it was cat. It's, let's be honest. It's cat chasing days. We're done. Right,
and I'm not sure Carly was ever really like Carly was just kind of afraid of everything, and so there was one. My buddy had a cat that came over one day, and the cat immediately just alphaed Carly, like popped her in the face, and so and that was kind of like her experience with. But we used to laugh because in the neighborhood we have a few like outdoor cats. And Carly would always like bow up, and we're like, "What are you doing? You have one of those in your house, and you won't even do anything to it."
So now you have Rocco chasing the cat,
correct?
And hopefully that will
it needs to subside.
Stop.
His future is very dependent on it.
Hopefully it needs to decide. In the meantime, this is the day that some of you saw that in the Memphis Flyer poll. We in the best radio show, local radio show category, we were second. And I very quickly identified that the winner in the category, Ronnie Caron, now this was a stolen election. There were roughly 1,000 votes by Olson family members.
Yes.
And another 1,000 by parent family members. And so
well, we had dead people voting.
Dead people voting. I think dead people were voting. And so today was the day they had me on earlier as we were storming the studio. I was on their very high rated fancy show. And so hopefully we're going to get those reversed because those election results will not stand. But I appreciate.
Well, I mean, has anyone certified those results?
No one has certified those results. And my legal team, I just want all the ballots to be counted. That's it. I just want all the ballots to be counted. So today on the second best local radio show in the city, we'll have Jason Smith in the next segment. That'll be fun. We'll talk to Jason Smith about all manner of things, including Memphis Tiger basketball, realignment, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe a little Caleb Williams. How's he feeling about his quarterback of the future here? So we'll talk to Jason. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. I listened to the podcast. Chris and Drew do a terrific podcast over at the Daily Memphian. And I had questions. Upon listening to the podcast, I got questions that I want to explore with Chris about the half-court offense of the Grizzlies this year. And then every year I give Jeffrey $1,000 to make me rich, and right now that plan isn't going that well.
Hey, we're trending.
We're trending back.
Oh, yeah.
We had a good week last week.
Oh, yeah.
What did we do last week?
We went 6-3, and we even tossed out, for the first time ever, Jeff, we tossed out a six-teamer money line parlay that got us some plus money.
Wow. We've never done that before. I wasn't here last Friday. Things must have gone off the rails with Drew. In fact, I gather Drew gave his own picks.
Yes.
I will never do.
Yeah.
I respect that. And I may have to, you know, just take a little of my money and put it with a different investment advisor because Drew hit, didn't he? Drew was a winner on the weekend, I believe.
I'm trying to remember we had a lot of the same stuff, but the big one he had was under in Alabama and Wisconsin that did not hit because Alabama couldn't stop scoring.
So we will, we got more picks because it's a massive weekend, honestly, in college football. We are underway. It is in earnest, a massive weekend in college football. We'll talk a little bit about that in the opening segment as well. But that's the lineup for today. We got Jason Smith, Chris Harrington, and then Jeffrey will continue to make you rich. Jeffrey, I'm not the kind of person who checks on my investments all the time. I'm a buy and hold guy.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. It works. It's been working right now my other investments in the actual market. I'm gonna use that same strategy here as well. First of all, because this was the news of the night last night, I think we can go ahead and say Shohei Ohtani good at baseball.
Yeah, it turns out that he might be very good. And also, I think we need to continue to congratulate. Shohei has the greatest fall guy in the history of the world. And we should all be thankful for his fall guy because we get to watch him still play baseball.
6 for 6, 3 home runs, 10 RBI, 2 stolen bases. So much for 50-50. He is now 51 stolen bases, 51 home runs. And by the way, it could have even been better because he hits a double. He's trying to stretch
it into trying a triple, to lay it.
Gets thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
But
I did appreciate him trying. You know what I mean?
Would have been on top of everything else hitting for the cycle. It's just ridiculous. The whole thing is it's preposterous.
Well, and then they're saying he might pitch in the playoffs.
He might pitch in the playoffs. This he's going to be MVP for the third time. The 1 year he wasn't. It was 1 year. 1 year he did the same as our radio show. Finished second in MVP voting. It is preposterousness. And it's nice that he's going to be in the postseason. You know, I've never liked the way people dog Mike Trout for staying with the Angels and therefore never playing in the postseason. It's sort of an interesting thing. We dog Kevin Durant for chasing championships, and then people dog Mike Trout for not chasing championships. But having said that, it is nice.
Yeah, but I think the key difference, though, is we can poke fun at the Thunder all we want. They are clearly a well-run franchise. The Angels are clearly a horrifically run franchise.
Oh, no. You can argue that everything would have been better for Kevin Durant had he stayed at Oklahoma City. Right?
Yes.
He would have gotten the championship, presumably. You think, maybe, probably. It's not like that franchise was dragging him into the depths at all. And so you're right. That is a key difference between the two. Anyway, Shohei Ohtani's awesome. Turns out Aaron Rodgers, people think he's awesome again. Jets win 24-3. I'll tell you honestly, watching that game unfold on my Amazon Prime subscription, and that's one I don't resent because I have it anyway.
Yeah, we don't have. It's not an add-on. Like it's not something else we have to give.
That was essentially free. Yes. Al Michaels is so bad.
You're just now getting it.
Is. As I know, no, but last year it was every game stunk, right? And by the way, last night's game also stunk, right? But you at least had the Aaron Rodgers experience. Is he back, et cetera? But it felt like it was last year when every game stunk, right? It was last year every game stunk, and you're like, what am I doing over here? And it just felt like he was just being sad. It just felt like Al Michaels was just being sad. And so because he was sad,
I think it was 2 years ago that every game was bad.
Is that two? Is that was two
yeah,
years
because
ago?
Russ was with the Broncos for 2 years, correct?
Yes.
So where we got screwed was that 2022,
Broncos.
Yeah. We got loaded up with the Broncos who stunk, and we got loaded up with the Browns. Remember, like, isn't that the year that the Watson trade happened?
That's possible.
We got loaded up. There was 1 year with the Broncos where we got loaded up, and then last year we got loaded up with everyone went all in on the Jets, and then Rodgers was done, you know, 5 plays into the season.
And I'm not a guy who spends a whole lot of attention, pays a whole lot of attention to who's calling the game. It just seemed like, you know, the way people describe Willie Mays struggling in the outfield at the end of his career, that's what it just seems. He could not be less interested in the proceedings. And it's just, he was so great. Like Al Michaels was so great once upon a time. And it's actually something, I'll be honest, like I just had a birthday. I'm 63. You wonder, like, at one point you overstay your welcome. You know, at one point do you like, he used to be good. And that's how I felt listening to Al Michaels last night. I'm like, oh, God, when he started talking about the moon and possums and whatever else, I thought it was woeful.
You know, an underrated he was checked out moment? Right when they came back from halftime, he tossed it down to Kaylee Hartung. And here's Kaylee with mayo. And I'm sitting there going like, is he checking it down because he's not sure if it's like, we have had that weird thing where we've always known him because he played at Tennessee as Jerod Mayo, but then there's been people that have been starting calling him Jared. And so, like, I was wondering, like, is he checking it down because he's not confident in the name? But then I was starting to think, like, is this supporting of Belichick? But it's like, I think he's closer with Robert Kraft than he is with Belichick. It was very bizarre.
Anyway. And then Aaron Rodgers, sadly, was really good. 27 of 35, 281, two touchdowns. He hit eight different receivers. He moved pretty well. You know, he did.
It's by far the best he's looked mobility wise.
He was making plays out of the pocket. And the other thing is that it felt like, well, Mike Williams made some plays. Like, it feels like the weapon, like before it was, he had one receiver, right? Garrett Wilson was his only receiver, and that was it. Well, you know, Lazard with a touchdown pass. Williams made some plays. Honestly, the truth of the matter is, his number one receiver wasn't that active, did catch a touchdown pass, but he just looked really good. Quick release, good, sharp, not perfect, not terrifying, but in order for the Jets to be at least challenging, I don't think he has to be terrifying. He was just really good. And then defensively, I mean, the Pats, I don't really understand it. I mean, they beat the Bengals in week one. They nearly won last week. And they were just god awful. First half yardage, 452 to 40. 452 to 40. Total yardage, 400 to 139. Seven sacks. We get a little Drake May last night. We got Drake May last night, and he gets absolutely drilled. So you got Drake May, who comes in briefly and gets sacked twice. And you've got Jacoby Brissett, who sacked five times. They had a lousy offensive line anyway, and then injury made it worse. You got a rookie starting out. It was absolutely demolished. Will McDonald with 2.5 sacks. He's now got 5.5 the last two games. They get 7 sacks. I guess Brissett's just in there to be sacked for the season. Is that what his role is?
Yeah. I mean, basically, it's like to sit there and take the beating so that Drake May doesn't have to.
So do you now take the Jets seriously? We got to talk about the hug.
Oh yeah,
we got to talk about the hug. They go up 14-0. Aaron Rodgers and Saleh on the sideline. Saleh goes to hug Aaron Rodgers, and I'll be honest, I have great respect for it because as a non-hugger myself,
yeah,
this is exactly how I feel when someone comes in for the hug. Yeah. I wish I had the temerity to do what Aaron Rodgers did, which is essentially shove Saleh away and say, I'm having none of this. We are not hugging. And I respect, listen, Aaron Rodgers and I disagree about a lot of things, but I think it turns out our opinion on hugging is very similar. Push Saleh away. Obviously, it was because, and they joked about it afterwards. I don't think it's some great schism. They joked about it afterwards. And obviously, the what Aaron Rodgers was basically was is that too soon to hug,
yeah.
Too soon in the game to hug. Isn't that why it was? You know, you can't be hugging in the first half when you're only up two scores, right? Wasn't that why he resisted the hug? It was not a resisting a hug on principle.
I kind of buy it. I also just think, I think there's going to be friction between. I'm on record. I don't think Saleh's that good of a head coach. I think he's still like defensive coordinator, not head coach. I just think there's going to be friction because Aaron Rodgers is going to want to play entirely differently than he is.
So you think basically that hug did not, it wasn't just a, it's too soon to hug, non-hug. It was a, what it fundamentally betrayed was a lack of respect.
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers does not.
Which, by the way, is not new for Aaron Rodgers.
No. He doesn't respect his mother.
Yeah. Literally his family.
You're right, his family. So it's a long list. We got a long list here.
He didn't really respect McCarthy. Right,
science and his mother.
Yeah.
Like, LaFleur. Science doesn't respect his mother. And, right. Who else do you want to put on the list?
LaFleur, I mean, McCarthy, like, look, the list goes on. Like, every coach he's basically, like, you know, had friction with.
Well, that's interesting. So it maybe is deeper than that. One can hope, because obviously, as a Bills fan, I want the Jets to utterly.
So I don't know.
You're not worried.
Yeah. I think the other thing that gets left out of this, the Patriots are so game script dependent. If they fall behind two scores, it's over.
Well, yeah, and they obviously they've been running the ball effectively.
And they couldn't. They had all the injuries up front offensively. Like, right. That was just like the recipe for just a blowout, boring game.
Other news in the world of sports: Joel Embiid, 3 years, $193 million. Sadly, no Adrian Wojnarowski to break the.
I didn't even get the. I don't even feel like I got like the alert.
You wonder, like, as this news is happening, is Woj sitting there, itchy fingers, regretting it a little bit? Like I was when Memphis played FSU.
Yeah.
Saturday, there was a part of me that was like, God, I wish I were there.
This doesn't
there
feel
was,
like
I. There's a big part of me that I wish. Or is he out there celebrating? Is he just like drinking a mimosa and thinking, thank God I don't have to be getting the details of this contract?
I feel like that's what his wife's doing.
Another one. What?
I feel like that's what his wife's doing.
That's clearly
is like is like, thank God he's not doing that. I think there's going to be some moment where he's like, God, I really wish I were in it. Like, back in the mix. That transaction didn't feel like one.
Joel Embiid says he would like to, plans to remain with the Sixers for the rest of his career. So then we get to college football. And obviously, we'll talk more about college football when you give us your picks for the week. Interesting game tonight, by the way, Illinois, Nebraska. This is the highest ranked Nebraska team since 2016. You got their fabulous young quarterback, Dominic Raiola, going up against a very good Illinois secondary. So that'll be an interesting Friday night test.
But by the way, for those that don't know, Raiola like cosplays as Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah.
Like a haircut, everything. Like he like does like the same warm up. It's bizarre.
But
he's very good.
He's very good. But then we got two massive games. Well, we could include Florida and Mississippi State, Jeffrey, in our massive games, just from a,
I have to bet it.
Like that one is,
it's so bad. You have to bet it.
Who should, if you have no dog in that fight, right? You just.
Or gator.
All you have is no dog or gator in that fight. All you have is a very keen sense of empathy, right? That's all you have. You have a finally, not you, Jeffrey.
Why would I have empathy for Florida? Because I don't.
This is not you. This is you're a human being out there who has empathy, okay? That's your main characteristics. So would you have more empathy for Florida or more empathy for Mississippi State?
I think Mississippi State, because I think it's going to get harder and harder in year zero, or you know the first year.
And the other thing is Florida. At this point, if we're talking about Florida fans, they hate their head coach anyway. They don't even want to win now. Winning is losing. Whereas for Mississippi State, it's a new head coach. Winning is still winning, right?
Yeah, you need anything to like just say like, why am I going to keep going on?
So the kind thing to root for here is a Mississippi State victory. If you're just being a good human, you need Mississippi State to win this game. There are others of interest, but the two I want to focus on are Memphis and Navy, obviously, and Tennessee and Oklahoma. The biggest game in the country this weekend is Tennessee and Oklahoma, undisputably. It's the one that everyone's talking about, all the previews are about. It's massively significant. Tennessee will be tested. This Tennessee team that has been incredibly explosive over the first part of the season, but now they get a Oklahoma team that is weirdly playing fabulous defense. Can't really throw the ball, but is playing fabulous defense,
or run the ball.
And so then you've got this. You got the meeting of the new entrance to the SEC. This is that. It's the dawn of a new age. It's the national significance. It's two glamour teams. It's all of that. So you've got, and plus it's Heupel return to Oklahoma, the place where he was fired, where he starred as a quarterback, was an effective OC and then was fired. All of those stories. But I would argue that for the teams themselves, the more significant game, this game matters more to Memphis, Memphis versus Navy, than the Tennessee-Oklahoma game matters to Tennessee. Discuss.
Yeah, I think you're probably right because Memphis is in the spot where they just can't lose. Like, Memphis's reality is like the BCS world where it's like you lose a game, you're done. And especially if you lose one of these league games against an opponent that's like, maybe they
you're done. This would do it. This would be the end.
They could
this
maybe literally lose to Tulane and then beat Tulane in the championship game, kind of get revenge, you know.
Well, so let's play this out. If they lost this game and then ran the table, that's also, by the way, unlikely that happens, right? If you lose this game, you're probably not running the table, right? Like, but if you lose the game and run the table.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you.
There but is still a world.
When they lost to Temple in 2019, we kind of thought, well, if you lose to Temple, you're going to lose another one. They didn't.
So it's conceivable. It's conceivable that they could lose this game and still be in the playoff, but it becomes very unlikely, right? It becomes very unlikely. Whereas Tennessee can lose this game and very clearly, like,
yeah, if Tennessee loses this game and beats Alabama at home, like, it's, yeah, it's right, a watch.
Whatever, it's fine. So again, though, like, these games aren't just significant as wins and losses, they're also significant in terms of revealing what these teams will are, what they actually are, right? Like,
absolutely.
It matters to Tennessee to win this game, but also we're now going to get a better sense what Tennessee is. It matters to Memphis to win this game, but the truth of the matter is that Memphis' opponents are 0-10 this season, and you know, and Navy will be a test. The lines for these two games, Jeffrey, Memphis 9.5. Is that the last one?
I'm seeing Memphis 9.5 right now, and then I'm seeing Tennessee. It's actually going against the Vols a little bit. It got as high as like 8, maybe, and now it's down to 6.5.
So, what do you think?
I mean, I think
let's take the Memphis one first.
The Memphis one to me is like, we've talked about it this week, it is just such a trap game where you have the big win on the road, and now you're having to go and play Navy. Navy's had a bye week. Navy's playing a little bit different functionally than they have previously, but we have no idea if Navy's any good. Like, I know Temple's really bad. Bucknell, like, we don't know anything really about Navy other than they're playing with a little bit more tempo, and last year they gave the Tigers a pretty good fight. I will say, though, there's been teams that I've covered, like, when Ole Miss beat Alabama in 2014, they had to turn around and play Texas A&M the next week, and everybody was like, oh, God. They had to go to A&M, like trap game central, and Ole Miss just pounded them. And so usually when you have a team like Memphis has, which is very senior-laden and, you know, with I think, pretty strong leadership, they kind of avoid these spots. But, you know, last year, and I get it, last year's not this year's team, but you know, they're a replay review away from maybe losing that game.
Yeah, I think the reason that I worry is just because I always expect the worst. That's how I grew up, right? And this is like perfect the worst. Like, they're ranked in one of the two polls. They're undefeated. They have the chance to go to the playoff for the first time. We're talking about realignment prospects and how compelling Memphis is as a realignment candidate this week. Lots of things are going well for this program. There's lots of momentum for this program. So if you are wired the way I'm wired, you're like, well, this can't last. What bad thing's going to happen? Oh, there's Navy on the schedule. Like, to me, the danger really is even less about who Memphis opponents have been or what new Navy offense there is or whatever else. It's just the wariness that comes from thinking things are going too well. You know, like, this, it just is such, it would be such the classic it would be such the classic loss, even more than if they won today and then lost against MTSU, which that won't probably happen, but whatever.
They lose from what I saw from MTSU. Like,
horrible. Yes, yeah. Right. So, but whatever. Lost the conference game down the road. This is the more gut punch because it's immediately off of the triumph. Yeah,
it's,
right?
It's the UTSA game right after beating Mississippi State.
Yeah, so it's just dreadful. And so I think that's why I'm wary. I do think Memphis will win. If I had to bet it, Jeffrey, I don't, but I would probably, I'd probably take Navy in the points. But there you go. The other game, Oklahoma. The problem with, I just don't see how Oklahoma catches up. I keeps up, you know? They are a completely different Oklahoma team than they have been, you know, in the past. They have a terrific defense, particularly run defense. They've given up nothing on the ground. But Jackson Arnold's done nothing. And by the way, he's been sacked 9 times. This could be a James Pierce arrive. You know, he hasn't actually done much this season. This could be a James Pierce game. And I just think, you know, who knows? Obviously, the Vols secondary is something that you worry about if you're a Tennessee fan, but I don't know that this version of this Oklahoma team is the team to exploit whatever potential weakness there is in the Vol secondary.
Yeah, Oklahoma's been really bad up front on offense. Their offensive line has not played well. I don't know. Part of me just, maybe this is like being the gambler that I am. What am I missing? This game just feels so obvious. Just take Tennessee.
It seems so obvious.
You know what I mean?
No, but is that called? Is that what we would call being square?
I mean, that
because
was
I 100%
it definitely
Tennessee
would. It definitely 100%. Would be square, but like there are
just take Tennessee.
Yeah, it's just like it's
totally
like what am I missing here? It's like what this seems so obvious.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Just take Tennessee. We'll get to that.
I mean, it is Nico's first true road start. Nico made a couple of bad mistakes in the NC State game, so I mean. There's kind of the idea that, Venables will scheme up a pretty good plan, but I don't know, man. Like, I've watched both teams play. It's like one team looks good and the other team looks fine.
Two other games of interest, by the way. We'll talk more about the college football slate when Jeffrey gives his picks in the second hour. Is Florida State going to get a win? Cal visits?
I most certainly hope not.
Visits? Oh, God. You really are.
I think they're really bad. And this is not to diminish the Memphis win. So I hate when people do that.
That one?
Two and a half.
It does diminish. It's funny to say that. We all say it's not to diminish the win. Here's the point. When one talks about how bad they are, it's not with the intent. You're not doing it
right.
With the intention of demeaning the Memphis win. It does take the shot. It does put in context the Memphis win because we think Florida State is really bad. Right? I mean,
yes.
So it does actually diminish the Florida State, but that's not the intent. That's not why you're saying
correct.
It. You're saying it just because you think they're really bad. Who's favored by 2.5?
Florida State.
Florida State favored by 2.5. So there's that one. And then I'm really interested in the Portland State Boise game just because last week's Portland State game was canceled because of whooping cough.
That was a new one.
And that was just the best.
Like that feels like something that would have happened like in 1910.
Right. So I never played the video game Oregon Trail.
Yes.
Have you? Did you ever play Oregon Trail? In when was Oregon Trail? Is it still a thing? I don't think it's still a thing.
I think you can play a version online. Like it's part of we're in that era of nostalgia, so I feel like everything kind of came back. It's heydays, the mid 90s.
When you played Oregon Trail, was it on your TV?
Computer.
Was it on your laptop? Was it on a?
Well,
it was on a computer.
Laptops were not really a thing at that point. But yeah, it was on
you'd
your.
You'd be at a big standalone console in your whatever,
yep.
and you'd play Oregon. Well, was there some kind of
CD-ROM
that you put
CD-ROM baby,
And then you'd what are you trying to do there? You're trying to get to Oregon.
You're trying to get from Independence, Missouri to Oregon.
And things befall you along the way, including, and I only know this because when there was a tweet about the whooping cough game cancellation last Saturday, there were all these references to Oregon Trail, well, Martha, whatever. Well, it looks like the game's whatever. And so you got whooping cough, Portland State versus Boise. we certainly hope they make it to the game safely, and then they can move to the next level or whatever.
From sea to shining sea, or they can get, much like the Oregon Trail, you can get your big check along the way.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk to Jason Smith on the other side. You've not really talked about realignment at all. That's good news for the week. And all these other matters. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Jeffrey's going to do the picks in the second hour. Before then, I will tell you, if you're buying a tractor, and why wouldn't you? You know what you need for your trip to Oregon? You need a tractor. You need a tractor for your trip to Oregon. Head on down to Mid-South Ag Equipment in Byhalia. They've got these Case IH tractors. They're smaller Case IH tractors. They're not the, you know, not something you need to be harvesting cotton or soy. This is more if you got a big garden or a big piece of land. Get yourself a Case IH tractor, 140 horsepower or less. Forget green, go big red with a smaller Case IH tractor. Right now, they're not only in stock, 0% financing. 0% financing. Once again, Mid-South Ag Equipment, Highway 302 in Byhalia. Get down there this weekend. When we return, we will talk to Jason Smith. Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Another college football weekend is upon us. Right now, you can get to Oak Hall, and I've been telling you about how you can get polo shirts in the same NCAA-approved colors, the official NCAA-approved colors. You can also, by the way, not just polo shirts, also quarter zips and hoodies. And now as fall is bearing down upon us, maybe not feel that cool out, but soon, quarter zips and hoodies. So whether you're repping Tennessee or Memphis or Alabama or Arkansas or Ole Miss, you can wear the official colors. You can wear them into the office because it's not some big logo stuff. It's just the same beautiful colors. You can wear them to the tailgate. Again, in comfortable, beautiful quarter zips and hoodies. That's on top of all the other beautiful stuff that they have at Oak Hall. I was at a wedding a few weeks ago. Looking my best. Why? Because I now shop at Oak Hall. They've got beautiful clothes and the people are the secret sauce. I could talk endlessly about the level of service and helpfulness and expertise and all of that every time I step in through the door at Oak Hall. So get there this weekend. Joined now by Jason Smith, Jason and John, every single day from 11 until 2. So Jason, this has been a big week of conference realignment talk. Although you guys got to jump on it last week with conference realignment talk. Not a lot of news in the last 24 hours. Where do you think we are and where are you on all of this right now?
I would say that Ross Dellinger's piece today that's dropped, and in your defense, it probably dropped right as you came on, but I would say that that's sort of advanced the story a little bit. So in terms of the new news, I mean, it's
something. Well, tell us then. What did Ross say?
Ross has basically written that Memphis is the hinge, that Memphis, if it decides to go, Tulane and USF will too, that Memphis, it's its call now as the, and I used this phrase earlier this week, sort of as the bell of the ball. I mean, you're as he described it, you are the best thing in the group of five, the most desirable program. It was so nice to read those words, you know, written nationally. But his point is, look, Pac-12 needs you bad. And if they don't get you, which means they possibly don't get USF and don't get Tulane, this whole thing falls apart. And so it really confirmed what we've said this week in terms of the, you know, what we know now. Memphis is dealing from a position of strength, whether it's with Pernetti in the AAC saying, look, you're going to have to do more for us because we, you know, this is an invitation that's just waiting on us to accept it before, you know, it's pretty much formally going to be, you know, handed out to us if we say we're gone. And so maybe Pernetti already considers it a done deal. Maybe he's scrambling desperately, as he's saying, to hold on to the, because he knows this is going to create a landslide. This is going to threaten to blow up his conference because it won't just be Memphis, at least according to what, you know, Dellinger is writing. It would be, you know, your top three. And so now he's not saying it's a done deal. He still points out, and I think this is why this is news, you know, with the exit fees that the, you know, you got to imagine that Memphis is going to want its exit expedited. And so you're talking settlement. SMU paid $25 million in its. I've seen Hitman Hoops threw out a number, I think maybe a couple of days ago, maybe today, $17 million, he thought. But it's going to cost you, and the question becomes, does the Pac-12 have that much, you know, to pay everybody's, you know, to pay everybody's exit fees for you? They're already doing a bunch for these Mountain West teams. And so money. Hey, can Fred step up and write another check? Well, we've been knocking on his door quite a bit here lately. But it's not the exit fee, he says, are the biggest reasons. He predicts about a $2 million increase per year in travel costs. We've talked about that. But what, you know, John pointed this out, and I think it was written earlier in the week. You know, what the Pac-12 is projecting, keyword, projecting. They don't have the TV deal, but they're projecting $12 to $15 million per year. Well, if you're at 8, that 12 to 15 looks real good. But it is in projection. It is in, this is what we hope to land. And they're not getting that if you're not bringing Tulane and say, if it's not the AAC's three best programs right now. And so I guess I could say that with UTSA, South Florida, I would still put South Florida above. Now, that, you know, there are reports out there that South Florida is still hoping ACC blows up down the road. You know, that they're, you know, they've got reasons not to go to. You're talking about all the way across the country for South Florida. That said, if they go with Memphis and Tulane, the chances that you create this sort of East in a new Pac-12, well, that starts to look good. And something John's been talking about, and he's absolutely right, you think about the basketball, you know, in this conference, set it to the side. It's not what runs things, but my goodness, would that be a perk in terms of what, and then and the possibility later on you're drawing in a Gonzaga? I mean, that's really exciting. But they're you know, they're, it's not a done deal, but what we know is that, you know, I think what has been advanced here in the story is that this thing really just comes down to what Ed Scott wants to do. Who's got the best deal? And right now, you just wonder, what can the AAC really do to hold on, to sweeten the pot for Memphis? You know, I said this with Jeffrey yesterday. You know, what's apparently reportedly happening with the ACC and the fact that it's trying to get more now to Florida State and Clemson, right? Memphis has that sort of leverage. Sort of. Again, we're a level down. Don't believe me, I'm not comparing us to the ACC, but Memphis has that sort of leverage right now with the AAC. And so this is pretty cut and dry. It's still, Jeff, what you've said is what we've all said. It's still a math problem. It doesn't have to be a very complicated one. If the AAC can't sweeten your deal, you're pretty hard pressed here, and you know you've got Tulane and South Florida with you. You're pretty hard pressed here not to go, it feels like. And so, what a moment this is for Memphis, because again, I would tell you, even though it's at a lower level, even though it's not the call up to what I've called the promised land, or whatever the power structure is going to be, there's been very few instances in this program's history where you've been this wanted. And so now, and Ross points this out, you know, being this wanted, well, maybe down the line, 7 years from now, I mean, you can read the reports right now about them trying to squash this ACC blow up, but maybe down the line, you know, it's a 7 years from now when that Brandon Rice or whatever it is, that deal blows up for the ACC, blows up or ends, you know, do you want to wait till then? You want to get a great deal from the AAC and wait till then? That's a long time to wait. You know, listen to John. I mean, you guys are right. Are you waiting on that boat? It might not come. And you're absolutely right. But the difference here is that Memphis is in a position of strength, and it's apparently going to make the call for not one, but maybe three schools.
So yeah, it's interesting. This literally.
Yeah, time. That's what I was trying to.
No, I've been talking. I appreciate it.
I've been giving you some time to skim. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it literally dropped as our show began. And
exactly.
And then yeah. I'll just give some people, because it is fun to read this. Memphis doesn't have a formal invitation into the Pac-12, but that's likely only because it hasn't accepted a forthcoming invitation. Mm-hmm. The oft-used motto during the coaching cycle applies here. A job cannot be offered if it isn't accepted. So they're not going to offer until they know Memphis is going to accept, and that's why it hasn't been offered. But here's the part that you said is delightful for a Memphis fan to hear. The Pac-12's pursuit of Memphis justifies what many in college athletics know to be true. The most desirable remaining Group of Five program is Memphis. The school resides in a college football hub. It has recent success in the sport. It has a historic basketball program. And perhaps most notably in these money-driven times, it has an incredibly wealthy and powerful booster. There's parentheticals about each of those qualities, by the way. It goes on and on and on. And so other things it says of interest here, they said the Pac-12's presentation involves the league as quote unquote projecting a per school distribution of 12 to 15 million and requiring at least a 5-year grant of rights. So there you go. That's critical there. You're not going to be able to bail for some, you know, blown up ACC in the next couple of years. It also says that one of the reasons to go for Memphis or any other school is that you don't want to be left behind. They don't want to be, in the end, you don't want to be, the quote is, they may not want to go, but they don't want the other guy to go without them.
You know what I mean? Well, so, what you cannot have, and that's probably the only thing I didn't say, right, is Tulane, South Florida go, you don't go. That's a dead man's mission. That would,
I don't know what projected means, but if projected is, I don't know the level of certainty that you can attach to projected, but if you're talking 12 to 15 million and now Memphis is getting 7 million, you go.
I've got 2 million in increased travel costs. That's a question we've been asking, but we're also talking about going in with Tulane and South Florida, which is going to help me in travel costs theoretically, because you are going to give me an Eastern division, right? Which is going to help me and going to incentivize me coming over. You're going to help me with this, South Florida needs that. You know, they can't be going to what, Pullman every freaking, sending all their teams literally across country. And so that's to your point. Yes, with the additional money, that starts to look like, okay, if we feel good about these projections, and again, that's still key here. That's what they're saying. You know, is TNT going to step it up? Who's it going to be? That's going to, where are we going to be? We'll find out. Go ahead.
So let's say that we get the news next Tuesday that it's done. Memphis is going, South Florida, Tulane, whatever.
Sure.
Is the reaction going to be, like when the Big East thing happened, the reaction really was, woohoo, mission accomplished, we did it, right? What will be the reaction if we find out Tuesday that it's done, Memphis is going? Will it be celebratory? Will it be, that's nice? Like what will be the community reaction to that?
Initially, and it's probably why we bumped heads initially on this, I was sort of even if you move, there's a cap on the sort of excitement. It's kind of what you said. Oh, okay, this is nice. And when this thing, because you're not sure when these initial reports spill out what it's going to look like over there. I mean, at that point or Tulane in South Florida, you're getting them. You didn't have all that. We still didn't have the numbers. We didn't know the travel cost numbers. Others have, and I've seen some other numbers out there coming in under three, but between 2-3 million, there's just so much that we didn't know. But now, if you can tell me again, you can start to see this coming together. And the key is here, and you said it there at the end, if you don't, but Tulane and South Florida decide, no, this is better for us, what are you left with? Then I agree, you are in a desert. You have maybe cost yourself the last chance for Memphis to not get the rung up to the power structure, but it will be a couple of rungs up from where you are. And no, it doesn't promise you that group of spots that outside the power structure spot. I don't even know what you call it anymore. In terms of in the college football playoff, but in most years, as Dellinger wrote, you're gonna be the best conference outside the power structure. And so in most years, you figure the champion out of that is going to get that spot. It's not going to be an automatic qualifier, but in most years, it mostly will be. And so all of that now, I think, gets you to back to your question. When you add all of that up, what's going to be there, what we know now, if you can get the 12 to 15 million like they're projecting, the fact that you're going to have a monster basketball conference, especially coming from a dog one, like it's an okay football conference, a lot, it's better than what you got. right? It's best thing probably outside the power structure, yeah, and that's going to get you, that's the ticket you need to the college football playoff. But it's a damn good basketball conference, especially if you get Gonzaga. And so back to your point, maybe initially you're saying, oh, this looks okay. Even 40 had written, lateral move. I don't think this is lateral anymore if indeed you look at where the AAC will be if the Pac-12 pulls this off. It's gone. It's disintegrates in terms of relevance. It's pulling from what then? So for all those reasons, I think yeah, the excitement level goes up. And no, it's not the sort of, ooh, we finally made it. We're ACC or Big 12. No, it's not that. But it's next best thing. And I think ultimately with these kinds of numbers and what we see in terms of the plan, you absolutely tell yourself it's a step up to the next, to the best thing out. And oh, by the way, the nation recognizes us as we go in. Right, is we're the best thing in this thing going in. We're one of the most resources. Let's go, and if anything opens up in, what's that Grant Wright you said, 5 years? Hey, maybe we'll be ready to shake again. Maybe we'll be ready to move again. I think you do celebrate.
It always felt like before it was sort of pass-fail. You were either in or you're out. And now what we're realizing is it's really not a pass-fail world. You know, look at Wake, even if you're in, like look at Wake Forest, it just bailed out of a game against Ole Miss because they're like, we aren't going to play that Colossus. You know, we can't afford to be playing Ole Miss. You know, it's no longer, you just want to be in the best situation for you and acknowledging it's probably never over now. Like, you know, and I honestly, and maybe this would wear off. Maybe you'd get in this new conference and you'd find it difficult. Maybe all of a sudden Boise's beating you regularly. Who knows? Like, whatever. Like, it would be tougher sledding or whatever. I would be intrigued. I would welcome Washington State coming in here, you know, and San Diego State coming in here to play hoops. And I just would – I would welcome the change after what we've sort of slogged through the last 20 years, getting to the conference, as you point out, getting to the conference basketball season – and having nothing to be excited about, except for those years that Houston was there at the end of the schedule, and they're not there anymore.
That's a dreadful league. I mean, if you have this conversation through the basketball lens, that's when it becomes a no-brainer. I mean, you're in a one big league now that doesn't have Dusty May and FAU. It doesn't have, more importantly, Kelvin Sampson anymore. I mean, it's just you. Now Andy Kennedy's your big, oh, come on, we got to get, with all due respect to you, we got to get up out of here. And so from a basketball, of course, no-brainer. You just hope that everything else comes together. It does. It feels like all the momentum set up on that side. And I would tell you, hey, what a nice position. Again, you could make the wrong decision, sure, and you could look at this, you know, anxiously and with anxiety and say, oh, what if? But this is a real position of strength for Memphis. And for Ed Scott, man, you're in the catbird seat. You're as I said, the belle of the ball. Let's see the deal, Pac-12. Show us the money.
We have not on this show talked much about, you know, we finally formally got the news of the assistant coach hires in basketball. Happily, that episode is behind us. Just on terms of the merits of the hires, what do you think?
Mike Davis, again, I mean, a great one to have. And he just fits the mold, you know, in terms of experience. Goes, you know, Stansberry, Larry Brown. I mean, the guy's been to a Final Four, been a head coach. So he fits that mold for Penny. Love what you hear about Nolan. Whether it's John talking about it, because all his college basketball contacts we had heard on this week, Nolan Smith brings an energy that, according to the, you know, and I trust both of those guys, that is different, that Memphis could really use an energy and enthusiasm. I think that could really help. And in terms of his relationships, while no, you're it's a different college basketball world, in the sense that maybe relationships, and if a guy offered a guy first and Nolan was the first guy, that mattered more. What matters more now is the check. Nolan's still with his relationships, the way he can get into, just about every room, every living room in the country is going to help you. You know, he'll say, Penny, you know, this is the guy we need right here. And he'll have done the work already. And so that's beneficial as well. And so, no, you like what you got. I mean, the question's always with Penny is you could have John Wooden on the bench. Is he going to listen to him? You know, when it comes to having that sort of, you know, that old head coach there next to him that's been through the wars, the keys, does he, you know, do you want to listen? You know, that's always been the key for Penny. And I think, in adding anyone, including a Mike Davis, you know, how much do you want him to help you, allow your assistants to help you in that role, whatever it is. And again, try to make the job easier on yourself. You don't want to make it harder on yourself year to year, whether that's assembling a roster or having to rehire a staff. So hopefully it's this will lead to some, you know, again, some continuity, whether it's with the staff or whatever else, and you'll have these guys for a couple of years.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Yeah, Jason Smith every single day, 11 until 2. We'll talk more about this Dellinger's report later in the show. We got Chris Harrington next. We got Jeffrey's bets. We have a lot to get to in hour number 2. Before then, I will tell you it is week 3 of the NFL football season, and you can get started with $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Build the same game parlay for the Sunday matchup of whoever you like. Again, $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. FanDuel is, of course, official sports book partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Harrington on the other side. It is the Jeff Calkins Show on a Friday, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Hannity joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Land of 1,000 Dances, R&B chart topper from 1966 by Wilson Pickett, who is among the artists who will go into the Memphis Music Hall of Fame next Friday. So I may feature some of those people, you know, next week. That song was recorded in Russell Shoals, Alabama, not in Memphis, but there are lots of Memphis people who were on that session.
All right. Two bits of news, Chris. One is, according to Drew Hill, and I guess the Grizzlies themselves, the Grizzlies are going to be, talked about uniforms yesterday, the Grizzlies are going to be wearing the Vancouver Grizzlies uniforms, classic uniforms, in honor of their 30th anniversary as an NBA franchise this year. And this time it's going to be in the white instead of the teal. What say you?
Yeah, they have teal trim or teal logo or whatever. I guess I have mixed feelings about that. I don't, as for like a fashion thing, nostalgia thing, I don't care about the Vancouver uniforms the way some people do. It is part of the franchise history, but it's such a weird thing, and because they just were bad the whole time they were there, and they weren't, and they're so little, like I don't even really think, I think a lot of people don't even really think about it unless you're like from Vancouver. And so I have mixed feelings about the promoting like the Vancouver stuff, you know, as a product. Like we were actually, when we were in Scotland this summer, we were walking down the street in Glasgow, the guy walked by with a Vancouver Grizzlies cap. And my wife was like, is he a Grizzlies fan? I'm like, he may not even know where Memphis is. Like, who knows? It's just like a fashion thing people wear because they like that teal logo.
Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about it, honestly. I don't have very mixed feelings about it. When I stop and think about it, like the Titans at one point were wearing Houston Oilers stuff, and I'm like, right. Well, like they stole the Oilers, you know, out of Houston. That meant something to that Houston franchise, and so it didn't feel like it was theirs to take. Right now, Vancouver is right. A very different deal. It's a very, you know, they didn't, but there are certainly people in Vancouver who miss that team. I think in the end, it's just fashion. And of the fashion, I do prefer the ones that are base white to the ones that are base teal.
Yeah, sure.
So there you go. Joel Embiid signed a new deal, or extension of a deal. 3 years, $193 million. Says he wants to retire a 76er. Your thoughts?
There's a lot of risk there. I mean, he's one of the best players in the world when he's healthy, but how much are you going to be healthy? And so I think, you know, the more money and the more years you put on to him, the riskier it gets. I'm sorry, I walked outside of a coffee shop and now there's a semi-truck driving by me.
Oh, that's fine.
It always happens when you try to get away from the noise that follows you around. I saw the tweet about that, but I haven't had time to think about it. I guess if you're Philly and maybe you have to do that, I don't know. Certainly your chance to win a title is a Joel Embiid connected thing, but I think there's diminishing returns on it. So I think the back end of any large Embiid deal carries tons of risk.
Well, and of course, he was already under contract, so it really is sort of all back end. Right. I think this takes him through 28, is what it does. So, yes, it extends through 29. Extends him through 29. So, yes, there's a lot of risk there. All right. I listened to your podcast with Drew, and I urge people to go listen to it over at the Daily Memphian. It was largely about the new coaching staff and half-court offense. Have the Grizzlies ever had a good half-court? Have they ever ranked, think, in the top half of the league in half-court offense? Have they ever been an effective half-court offensive team?
Yeah, but not in this era. And it's been a while. I don't have the ranking of every year in franchise history like in my head, but I think there is a historical pattern across eras of the team not being particularly good at half-court offense. Most of the times that they've been good, they've been driven more by defense than offense across eras. And I think offense overall, they've rarely been top 10. But if you look at like the offensive rankings and the half-court offensive rankings, they have tended in across all eras to rank better overall in offense than in half-court offense.
So is that? Particularly this year, given the new additions to the staff, there's a sort of a focus. And, you know, Jaren was sort of hinting that there's a new plan and he's not going to tell Drew the plan. Jaren was at a voter registration thing. Commend Jaren for continuing to be involved in getting people to register to vote. But in the end, aren't the Grizzlies, haven't they been an ineffective half-court offensive team because they can't shoot? I mean, because of their offensive, isn't it more personnel-driven than scheme-driven?
Yeah, those things are related, but yes, it's all interconnected in basketball. But yes, I think that's generally the thing. And so, I don't think coaching tweaks transform what you're going to do talent. Basically, if you have the same talent, so I think it can goose things a little bit here and there. But I think it starts with the talent you have, and getting better shooting. Sure.
Okay. So given that, focused on that for a minute, what is the case that they can be better? I mean, better than last year. Last year was a wreck, right? I mean, last year was a disaster. How do you imagine that if one of the goals is to improve their half-court offense, how will they be better this year?
Well, I mean, I sort of want to actually see players on the floor and actually really get into it and think about it. So I may write something 180 degrees from whatever I'm going to say now when I actually can get into it. Ja Morant's back, and that does a lot. I think Zach Edey, they have tended to be at their best offensively when they've been based on that fulcrum of Ja Morant and the powerful screen setter who cleans up the offensive glass. And there's every reason to believe that they can duplicate that sort of dynamic with Zach Edey. Slightly different than Jonas Valanciunas, slightly different from Steven Adams, but the same rough dynamic. I think Edie gives them more of another score to go to in a way that Steven Adams didn't. And, their offense has tended to be really good when they've had Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Luke Kennard, like all in the mix, and that hasn't actually happened that much. So I think there's some hope if you you can get all three of those players like in the lineup more than half the time, which has not happened to this point since they acquired Kennard, that the spacing shooting stuff is going to be better.
Yeah, one of the points that was interesting you made was that one of the things they've done well in terms of half-court offense is when Steven Adams was there was offensive rebounding. And particularly in the rare moments when you had Brandon Clark and Steven Adams there, they were really good. I mean, it was survivable because they were really good as offensive rebounders. It's interesting to me, I'll be interested to see Zach, he's obviously an enormous human being and will be, an effective rebounder. But it'll be interesting to see. He'll be better at finishing than Steven Adams. But I can't imagine he'll be the rebounder that Steven Adams is. I don't know. That will certainly look different, I guess. Where's the rebounding going to come from?
Well, a lot of it's going to come from Zach Edey. I think there's every reason to believe he will be a very high-level offensive rebounder. I mean, Steven Adams was the best offensive rebounder in the league his peak year with the Grizzlies. And so you know, there's a lot of room below that. You can be pretty great and not be the best in the league. And so I think Edie will be extremely effective on the offensive boards. Hopefully he's extremely effective on the defensive boards. And, you know, team rebounding. I think Vince Williams punches above his weight big time as a rebounder. I mean, John Morant's pretty good at getting defensive boards. I think, you know, Jaren is not a good rebounder on his own, but lineups with Jaren and a true center have had great rebounding numbers. And so I think if you're playing Jaren and Edie together, that's probably going to be a really, really good rebounding team.
I did think that one of the interesting points you made was, so the Grizzlies have not been, we differentiate. They've not been an effective half-court offensive team, but the 53-win team was a very good offensive team, right? And we care about it because you get to the playoffs and half-court offense means more, or we think it means more. I think it probably does mean. But then you pointed out that the key to them, when they were this effective offensive team 2 years ago, I guess it was, It was largely keyed by a bunch of players or who aren't here, who either created defensive rebounding or created turnovers. And Kyle Anderson, D'Anthony Melton, like it was that group. So we worry about them wonder how they will be as a half court offensive team. But a lot of the players who keyed their effective offense, like how are they going to be at that style of play?
Well, the missing link in your description is the reason one of the main reasons the offense was better is because they played more in transition, and so you had a higher frequency of transition attempts. No matter how good your half court offense is and how bad your transition offense is, your transition offense is still going to be more efficient than your half court offense. And so the more you can play in transition, the better, regardless. And they were either first or second or whatever in the league in that period in the frequency in which the percentage of their shots they took in transition. And that was partly about, you know, not only defensive rebounding, but defensive rebounding that you got out quick, like the outlet passes of Steven Adams, the outlet passes of Kyle Anderson. And it was partly about the turnover generation, the turnovers that you would generate from D'Anthony Melton and Kyle Anderson and players like that. But obviously, John Morant's a big part of that, too. You know, Zaire Williams, to some degree, was a part of that. His ability to get down the floor and be a finisher. You know, Brandon Clark. So the dynamic of the outlet passes, the turnover generation, the dynamic finishing and transition, you look around the roster, it doesn't really look like that anymore. So I don't think you can, you know, Vince Williams plays like that, but for most players don't. So I think you need the trade-off of better shooting, better half-court scoring, not only because you want that anyway, but you want that to offset what you're probably not going to be able to do as well in transition.
Does Marcus Smart do that?
He generates turnovers. He's not a good rebounder. He's not a finisher. And so he does some of that, you know.
Yeah, he does some of it. It'll be interesting. You did talk about Zach Edey's threes. You do not expect a steady diet, I take it, of Zach Edey threes, or even
a meager
diet.
I think it will matter if he can comfortably take a wide open one every once in a while. Like to me, that's what we're talking about right now. You know, maybe in 5 years he becomes Brook Lopez. I mean, who knows? But I think right now the question is, does he never shoot them, or is he a threat to take a wide open one or two times a game when he's like trailing the break or whatever?
Jonas became that in New Orleans. Was he that at all, even that, at Memphis?
He was starting to become that, but he became a little bit better at that once he got to New Orleans. Stephen Adams did not shoot them.
And then, Stephen Adams did not shoot them. And then in terms of the rest of it, I'm, you know, the focus on what the assistants will mean, I can't begin to know. What Asala and Roche and all of them, I can't begin to know what it will mean. I'm interested in how they deploy the players, the groupings that they use, et cetera. But I ask you, because we have to get ready for these new buzzwords, do you know what collective basketball is or advantage creation? Are those two that we're going to look for? Collective basketball, instead of gears, we're shifting to collective basketball and advantage creation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just different ways of saying the same kind of stuff, right? I mean, advantage creation is like, you know, created advantage. Like, you know, the guy in front of you can't guard you, or you get past the guy who's guarding you, and suddenly there's a, you know, instead of, you know, you've left one defender behind, and now you got, you know, think of a 3-on-2 break, right? That's like an advantage, right? And so doing things that bend the defense and create an advantage for you, this is new lingo. It's not a new concept. And collective basketball, the collective basketball thing was funny because when Taylor Jenkins was saying that, he kept talking about collective basketball and positionless and all this. It was in the context of introducing Zach Edey. And, like, if there's one thing Zach Edey is not positionless, he's probably the least positionless guy in the world, you know? And so, like we'll see. I mean, basketball is a fluid game. And so, you know, the positional designations to some degree are just like, you know, things we jot down on a piece of paper. It's not really related to the play on the floor. But, like, Zach Edey is, like, you know, probably not going to be bringing the ball up the floor.
No, and it was funny because, you know, after they hired, which one? After they hired, I think it was LaRoche. There was a sudden burst of looking at all of his past teams and realizing that they never set screens. And you're like,
right.
Oh, the Grizzlies are. And then they go draft Zach Edey. I believe Zach Edey is going to be setting screens. Thank you very much.
So I am open to the idea that something dramatic and different and novel is going to happen on the floor. But, like, I'm fine. Let's wait and see what it looks like when they play basketball. I'm not going to get over my skis on, like, you know, what the inherent meaning and effect of assistant coaching changes.
I do think, as an homage to Big Country in the Vancouver jersey, Zach Edey in the Vancouver jersey, like, cut from the same cloth, right? I mean, he'll fill it out well.
That's pretty good.
So there you go. All right, Chris, have a great weekend. We will talk to you on the other side.
All right, thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. I remember when Big Country was the honorary duckmaster at the Peabody. I believe I wrote a column on not Zach Edey. We need Zach Edey as the honorary duckmaster, clearly, but I remember Big Country as the honorary duckmaster. All right, we'll talk more about the latest on realignment. Ross Dellinger had another piece that dropped, and we'll talk about that. On the other side, but Jeffrey is going to make his picks a big weekend of college football. We will do that next. Before that, I will tell you, if you were thinking about getting engaged, Robert Irwin would be the place to go for all kinds of reasons. A, it's a marvelous experience. You can walk in there with an idea or an idea about an idea or a picture or whatever, or just you want to understand the process, they will walk you through it. They won't tell you have to sell your kidney in order to get a beautiful ring. If you do get your ring there, it comes with a peace of mind from knowing that if it's a custom-made engagement ring, you've got 365 days to return it, no questions asked, which is kind of amazing. Like, that is total peace of mind. You designed this, maybe car, housing. It's the most important thing you will ever buy. It certainly is an incredible emotional investment in addition to everything else. And it's nice to know that in the end, you've got 365 days to return it if you like. You won't return it because it'll be stunning. All that plus, by the way, like free jewelry, spa service for life, which means stone tightening, buffing, polishing, ring sizing, all of that. 24 months deferred interest, or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. It's bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, online at rijewelers.com. We'll have Jeffrey's bets when we return. Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show. We're going to get to Jeffrey's bets here in a moment. Before we do that, Jeffrey, you and I haven't had a talk. We were talking to Jason Smith about the latest from Dellinger. You and I have not talked about it as of yet. Your thoughts on what he's reporting?
Feels like a leverage play, doesn't it?
Meaning?
If you're Memphis, you want to get the best possible deal, right? I mean, this is kind of your future.
Well, it feels like a leverage play against who? You think they're leveraging AAC right now, or are they leveraging?
I think the leveraging.
You have to spell it out for me. Tell me who they're leveraging.
I think they're leveraging the Pac-12 and the AAC to see who can get the best possible deal. And I mean, I personally think they're better off going, but it is important to note there is no TV deal yet. And you don't know what you're going to.
What's interesting is that I mean, lots of interesting things about it. First of all, nice to, you know,
nice to be courted.
Nice to be courted. We've said that before. And we've said nice that Memphis is, in fact, the number one. It's nice, like we've been saying that, but it's nice to have someone outside of Memphis saying that Memphis is the most compelling Group of Five team out there. And then in all the reasons why I wrote in my column that they should go, seem to be bearing out here. Like there's at least the projections, we'll talk about that in a minute, projecting, I sort of said Boise would not have jumped unless they had some reasonable confidence that they would be getting a reasonable, a fairly impressive TV deal. Here, Ross Dellinger is reporting that their presentation includes 12 to 15 million. Now, that's not a guarantee. That's their projection of 12 to 15 million. If you're getting 12 to 15 million, and that's before the bowl payouts and NCAA payouts, I think, and all of that. If you're getting that.
Yeah, I believe that is just, I think that is just the value of the TV deal.
Of the hypothetical TV deal. Yeah.
Correct.
If you're getting that as opposed to the 7 million and you're paying 2 million, I said a long time ago, it's a math question. If you used to get 7 million and now you're getting 12 to 15, but you have to pay 2, so the 7 becomes 9. Let me ask you, Jeffrey, which is bigger? 12 to 15 or 9, which is a bigger number?
The former.
12 to 15 is definitely bigger than 9. So you're in a better conference. You're in a dramatically better basketball conference. You're in a better football conference. You're getting more money. What exactly is the and according to this, anyway, you are bringing two or three teams with you who can help create geographic travel, help alleviate the geographic travel problem. What exactly is the holdup, except for how theoretical is that 12 to 15 million? Right?
Yes, like in the 100%.
That it's over. If that,
well, I mean,
if
like, you are, we just saw it with Michael Jordan. Like what he put that house on the market, it feels like 15 years ago, and it was like on the market for like 30 million. Like it just sold this week for 14. Like it can be, you know what I mean? Like it can be valued at something, but someone has to hand you a check.
No, but there can be differences. There can be, to take your metaphor. You can put your house on the market and type in joshhasthebuyers.com yep. and put the number in there and see what comes up, or Zillow or wherever, and then put it in the market. And then if you don't get that, you're like, oh, well, boy, don't I feel silly, right? But what if it's this situation? House is, you're thinking about selling your house, and a guy across the street says, I desperately want to move. I will give you X dollars for your house if you list it on the market. And so then you list it on the market.
Yeah.
That's different. And to me, the TV executives, we don't know what they're saying, but they could be like that neighbor who's saying, if you sell your house, you know, I'm going to give you $350,000 for it. Now they can still back out. It's not a signed contract, but that's different than just an abstract. We think, well,
correct.
Yeah,
this is, here's
that's
the value
discussions yeah. with the guy who says he wants to buy it.
Yes.
Right.
100% agree.
And so, I mean, let's be honest. I've felt it from the start. It's not a no-brainer because it's not a no-brainer unless you get the assurances you need. But once you get the assurances you need, then it becomes a no-brainer. And so that's where we are. Do you have any sense of the timing that we're going to see on this? It feels like there's no reason for them to.
I mean, you know, when John Canzano was on the show on Tuesday, I mean, the other thing you have to remember about this is they don't have to deal with a big, huge committee. It's basically two presidents, and it's two schools and a commissioner. And that's why they've been able to work pretty quickly. But John said he spoke with the Oregon State AD at the artist formerly known as the Civil War last week. And he's like, we are, like, time is of the essence. Like, go, go, go.
So there you go. We wrap up this week with more interesting news. I'm urging Tim Buckley to write a concession column. I was doing that during the break. We did a back and forth where I said they should go. Tim said they could stay. And I urged Tim. I said this would be the moment. I've never had Action write a whole Hawkins is Right column.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this would be the moment. And so I'm urging Tim to write a concession column. They should go. Never mind what I said earlier this week, they should go. Calkins was right. Anytime anyone wants this, Calkins is right. I'm here for it. All right, Jeffrey, you were right. You're right every Thursday. You're righter than right every Thursday. And last week, 6-3, 6-3-1. What was your record? I was not here.
We had a 6-3 week last week, and we also hit our 6-team money line parlay.
Now, what's this fancy stuff?
Excuse me, hold on. It might have been an 8-teamer. Hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, a little 8-teamer parlay.
You've resorted to fancy bets here in an effort to.
Well, we had to plant our flag last week.
All right. Who we got this week, Jeff?
Got a tight Jeff little 14-team card.
Oh my God.
Jeff, let's go to the CW tonight, 9 p.m. I don't want to wait for Washington State to be hung over from the Crapple Cup win. Big emotional win. San Jose State getting 13 points. I'll take them all. Give me San Jose State plus the 13 with Washington State in a trap spot.
San Jose State over future conference partner Washington State. You get 13 points. All right, next.
Jeff, this is the classic. I just don't believe this team should ever be favored. Cincinnati hosting Houston in the battle of artists formerly known as AAC teams, now cosplaying as Big 12 teams. Houston getting 3.5. I'll take them. Give me the 3.5.
Houston is getting 3.5. You will take Houston plus 3.5 over Cincinnati. All right, next.
Jeff, I've watched both these teams. It's tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. God, I hate doing this, but I think the wrong team's favored when West Virginia hosts Kansas tomorrow. West Virginia's just not very good. Kansas has been good, but makes critical and utter mistakes. I think the wrong team's favored. Kansas is getting 2. I'll take it.
Kansas plus 2 over West Virginia. Next.
Jeff, I made a promise at the beginning of the show. When Florida plays Mississippi State tomorrow, we will have a bet. And normally what I've been doing Mississippi State games is just blindly taking the over. So far, it's 2-1. It's not a bad play. But that would be copping out, Jeff. You've got to pick a side here.
You got to pick a side.
Here are the choices. Would you rather lay 6 points on the road with a team who might or might not have had players liking Instagram posts suggesting that they fire the coach? Or would you take 6 points with a home team that got beat by 4 scores with a MAC team and might have had a player quit at halftime?
Given that,
mm-hmm.
Give me the Gators.
Give me the Gators. I'm laying the 6. I think Florida's. I think both these teams are bad, but Florida is bad in the can't pick a quarterback, can't stop the run. Mississippi State is bad in the sense of might be the worst Power 5 team. I'll lay the 6.
How about the quitting thing, though? That does add an element of, you know, the Instagram thing. That adds an element of suspense to the mix.
I mean, how can you not be excited for this game? I don't understand.
No, that's why I mentioned it at the top of the show. It's compelling. It's a compelling matchup. Next.
Jeff, I know that Northern Illinois, it's been 2 weeks since they've beaten Notre Dame. They had a bye last week. But if you've been paying attention to anything Northern Illinois is doing, they're still hungover from that win. I got the Buffalo Bulls. Catching 13.5. That's going to be a game. Run, clock, run, run, clock, run. I'll take all 13.5. Give me the Bulls.
Buffalo, 13.5. You get 13.5 points. The Bulls of Buffalo over plucky Northern Illinois. Next.
Jeff, Georgia Tech, the last 2 seasons as an underdog, 8-2 against the spread. And one of those losses was Lane Kiffin absolutely knowing what the number was and running offense with about 1.5 minutes. I got the Yellow Jackets getting 10.5 on the road. I'll take it against Louisville. Give me 10.5.
Georgia Tech plus 10.5 over Louisville. Next.
Jeff, this is we're getting a bad line, but we don't care. Special of the week. The Arkansas Razorbacks head to the Plains. Auburn with a new quarterback. I think it was false hope. Having watched that New Mexico game, they didn't look a whole lot better. Arkansas was hungover in the first half, but then started to look a little bit better in the second half. They fumbled going in to take a 2-score lead last week and put UAB away. I just think Arkansas is the better team. I'll take the 2.5, but I'm really taking Arkansas outright.
Arkansas plus 2.5 over Auburn. Doesn't shock me there. Next.
Jeff, our first of the SpongeBob SquarePants picks of the week.
Yep.
USC goes to the Big House. I don't know what I'm missing here. Like,
This is a classic matchup.
Great uniform matchup. But yes,
and you got a new quarterback for Michigan.
Yes, who can't throw. And also got beat out by Davis Ward.
The old quarterback couldn't throw either, except unless you count interceptions.
Right, but this guy was supposed to be the quarterback, and he couldn't be the quarterback. Now he's the quarterback. Why on earth would I bet on them?
You would not. You should not. You should not bet on Michigan this year. You should just take the year off.
Yes.
From betting on Michigan.
But instead, we're going to bet USC. We're going to lay the 5.
USC minus 5. I have a feeling we are not going to hear the greatest fight song in the land the entirety of this football season. You heard it a lot last year. It's going to have to do until next year. USC minus 5 over the Wolverines. Next.
Jeff, LSU's not covered a line this entire year, and that includes when they played Nicholls State. Oof. Well, that changes on Saturday when the UCLA Bruins come to Baton Rouge. I'll lay the 22.5. I don't care. Wow. LSU's going to throttle UCLA. UCLA stinks. UCLA needs to be in that Mississippi State category. Maybe the worst Power 5 team.
Attractive uniform.
Great uniform matchup. Beautiful uniform.
Really beautiful on both sides. Yeah. LSU minus 22.5 over UCLA.
In their sissy blue shirts. Jeff, last week we trusted.
I think sissy's kind of gone out of style.
Well, that was what Ed Orgeron.
I know I did. Yeah, go ahead. Next.
Sissy blue. Get over here and send it to me in your sissy blue shirts. Jeff, my boy Diego Pavia. Yes, they took a tough one last week at Georgia State. Weird game. They took a safety on a kick return. A lot of things went wrong. Bad defense. But here's the thing. Everybody's jumping ship. Everybody just thinks this is Vandy, Vandy, Vandy. No. My boy Diego Pavia is still 13-5 against the spread. I'm getting 20 points. Give me 20 points with the Doors.
Vandy plus 20. Next.
Jeff, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Florida State's either playing DJU or they're either playing Brock Glenn. And with all due respect to our local product, Brock Glenn, I have not forgotten the ACC championship game. It's also possible DJU is their best option, which means they're just not a good football team. We got my boy Justin Wilcox as an underdog. Give me Cal. Give me the 2.5.
Cal plus 2.5 over Mike Norvell's, over the fighting Mike Norvell's. That's really unfortunate. Next.
Jeff, we got our second SpongeBob SquarePants play of the week. The Tennessee Vols head to Norman, Oklahoma. Right now, currently, the Vols a 7-point favorite. This is the first time the Vols have been favored on the road against a ranked opponent since 1995, when a sophomore, Peyton Manning, went and took on the Arkansas Razorbacks, and they thumped them. I think it was 49-20, something along those lines, covered easily. One team has been absolutely hammering the line. The other team has played every single game right up to the line or getting beat convincingly by the line. The line is not enough. I will lay the 7 points with Tennessee. Give me the Vols.
UT minus 7 over Oklahoma.
Next. Jeff, do I believe? I do not believe in Colorado's offensive line. I do believe in Travis Hunter. I do believe, to a certain degree, in Shedeur Sanders, but I don't like that Shedeur Sanders is throwing his offensive line under the bus. Baylor has been playing a little bit better, slightly. This, to me, is just, I don't know how you can literally trust Colorado as a favorite ever. Colorado acted like they won the national championship against Colorado State. Give me the Baylor Bears in a game that I still cannot believe is on national television in prime time, but I'll take the 2 with the Bears.
Baylor plus 2.5 over Colorado. That's the power of Dion, right?
Absolutely.
Although I do think
they still draw.
I do think there's a little, like, you know, a little bit of people are getting weary of it. Not they're not even hating him anymore. Like, they're not good enough to hate. They're not, you know, whatever. I think people are kind of done with it. It's fun to watch Travis Hunter play football.
Yes, he's awesome.
Baylor 2.5 over Colorado.
Jeff, we will conclude the card with a system play. BYU picked up a good win against SMU last week, but Kansas State quietly just been an absolute wagon. I don't actually think BYU's that good. I think everybody's thinking, ooh, the Cougs catching points at home. No, thank you. You can take all those points. I'll lay 6.5. Give me K-State.
K-State minus 6.5 over BYU. All right, I have some other games I want to ask you about. Just to be clear, San Jose State plus 13 over Washington State. Houston plus 3.5 over Cincinnati. Kansas plus 2 over West Virginia. The Florida Gators minus 6 over Mississippi State. Buffalo, the Bulls plus 13.5 over Northern Illinois. Georgia Tech plus 10.5 over Louisville. Arkansas plus 2.5 over Auburn. USC minus 5 over Michigan. LSU minus 22.5 over UCLA. Vandy plus 20. Go Doors over Missouri. Cal plus 2.5 over the Fighting Mike Norvells. UT, that's your Tennessee Vols, minus 7 over Oklahoma. Baylor plus 2.5 over Colorado. And K-State minus 6.5 over BYU. That looks like a lucrative set of selections to me. You did leave out Memphis Navy. What say you?
I mean, to me, it's if I'm going with my theme of the
six
week,
and a half,
which is
six and a half,
right? 9.5.
Yeah,
my theme of the week would be trap spot. I wonder if everybody, though, like, I've kind of talked myself into, everyone's talked themselves into Navy, so maybe I'd go Memphis, but if I had to play it, I'd probably say, all right, the clock's going to run in this game, you're going to give me two scores, I'll take two scores.
A couple more of interest. Any thoughts on Illinois-Nebraska tonight?
I don't think Illinois is actually good. I just don't know if I'm ready. Like, are we just blindly saying, like, we're at the point where we just trust Nebraska is a touchdown favorite?
I like the story, though. I just like him. You know, I just like
No,
the
I mean,
story.
Matt Rule's clearly been, a very good coach.
Matt Rule, second year, like, you know, my second year Matt Rule, put me down for that.
I would lean lay it, but this is the first time that Nebraska is going to play an offensive line that can probably block them a little bit.
NC State, Clemson. We had Clemson with a big bounce back. What do you think there?
So NC State's probably playing the young freshman. We had Clemson bounce back against App State, but I don't know how many sickos were out there watching App State, South Alabama last night. App State might just be horrible. And so right. I kind of lean towards ACC teams. It's kind of whose line is it anyway, in which, you know, everything's made up and the points don't matter, so you're better off just taking the underdog. I would lean 19, but if you tell me that NC State doesn't score, I'm not surprised either.
Our conference mates, South Florida, headed to the Pac-12 with Memphis, maybe, play Miami.
Thoughts? I really wanted to put this on the card, but I wonder if everybody – I was thinking about taking 17 because I was really – But then I started thinking, I was like, what if we're just kind of overrating South Florida because
they hung with Alabama, which they always do.
Yeah. Like, and Miami's going to be very physical with them. I don't really trust the quarterback at South Florida. Like, I think that could turn into a turnover fest. I just stayed away.
All right. And we haven't talked about the NFL. Obviously, another big NFL weekend this weekend. In terms of games of interest, you got Houston at Minnesota. How about that one?
Battle of the undefeateds, as everybody expected.
That is the battle of, well, I mean, we're not surprised at one of them, right? We got a couple of battle of frauds in the Chargers and mm-hmm. Pittsburgh. Like, who's real? Who's real anyway, right?
Oh, by the way, I said yesterday on the afternoon show, what you should do is you should watch Minnesota-Iowa on DVR right before that game, because that's just going to be a Big Ten game.
That makes sense to me. We have, I think, the biggest game of the weekend, Baltimore-Dallas, just because it feels desperate for everyone involved.
One of these teams is going to be 1-2. Well, I guess technically you could tie, but still. Likely one of these teams is going to be 1-2.
Yeah, one of these teams is going to be 1-2. And one of these teams is going to be saying, what the hell, right? Like, that's an interesting one. How about Detroit-Arizona?
I think that's sneaky, could be fun game.
Is Arizona for real? Like, well, know, maybe like, just
going Detroit's not looked
Bills
good.
Made them look bad, and Detroit has not looked good. And now their coach is having to change houses to avoid the hecklers. I don't know if KC-Atlanta is interesting.
You skipped over Big Bro, Little Bro night.
Big Bro, Little Bro night. Who'd I miss?
San Francisco at the Rams. Shanny versus McVay.
You know, the problem there is
both teams are so injured. Have you seen the Niners injury report?
No, who's on? I mean,
everyone.
Everyone's on the Niners one. It's funny though; they still seem competent, right? the Rams, I don't know. Like there was a story, I forgot where it was, about teams that would like to add a high quality wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right?
And, all of them.
And the answer, of course, to that is all of them. But the ones that were singled out were the Rams, because obviously they are down their two best receivers, right? They're out. You got Kansas City, Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown is out for the year now, apparently. So Kansas City wants to add something in the way of weapons. The Commanders want to add a quality wide receiver, if we're just listing teams. And I personally would like the Bills to add a quality wide receiver. Like, it's all great. They're doing what they've done. Their wide receivers haven't done anything, right? Like, done nothing. Now, they haven't had to, but ultimately they will have to. So here we got the battle of the young, crazy-ass, unproven, raw quarterbacks in Chicago, Indianapolis. You like that one?
Yeah, that's a fun one. Also, we have the game that nobody should watch, Giants at Browns.
We got the Giants. There's some dogs here. There's Carolina and Las Vegas. Yeah. Like, there's that one.
New Orleans is a fascinating game.
Philly, New Orleans is fascinating.
Is New Orleans for real?
And is Philly this bad?
And could, like, because we know one thing about Philly, like,
see a firing here.
Could it can turn very quickly.
All right. Well, it shapes up to be a fabulous weekend. I'm a little nervous about Memphis Navy. I would like, on top of everything else, here you have Ross Dellinger writing about how the Tigers are the most coveted team outside the power conferences and everything else. All of that good stuff is happening. You got Penny, who's moved, by, you know, hopefully past some of the drama now that he has new staff in check. You got the new stadium going up. You got the new AD. A lot of good things happening. I would like to have a celebration at the Middle Tennessee State game, which is going to be 6:30, I believe, the next Saturday. I'd like to fill the hole and fill the Simmons Bank Stadium. And it's just going to be so damn deflating. I spend so much of my life as a sports fan worrying about the bad things that could happen. And so I don't want disaster. And then for Tennessee, it's just fun. Like, that's a great matchup to be able to go in there and play that game. And I expect them to be triumphant. All right, Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming next on Jason and John. Gabe Kuhn will join them at 1:30 to preview today's game. Tim Murray joins us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. We will have Blake Topmeyer joining us. We'll talk, of course, that Tennessee-Oklahoma game as well. And then Ross Dellinger is going to join Gabe at 4:30.
How's Giannotto taking the Michigan season, by the way?
He was expecting it. His group chat is what I find funny.
Yeah. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will be back Monday. We got to get out of here for now. Work is done.